Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrn, a potpourri of podcasts by me, veterinary ethologist Myrn Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed. Two events involving animals, one large, one small, periodically occupy my thoughts the past few weeks. The first concerned a large chunk of concrete that washed up on the Oregon coast. The second, the behavior of a small gray squirrel. Relative to its impact on the environment in general or a specific animal population, the significance of that concrete chunk was as weighty as the chunk itself. But though his message was less dramatic, the squirrel's was just as significant. First, the concrete chunk. It served as the mechanism of one of the largest international migrations of marine species in recent history. So far, more than 200 species of crabs, mollusks, sea stars, mussels, and fish. The story of their journey is a long and complicated one. It began when a 9 to 9.1 earthquake occurred off the eastern Pacific coast of Japan in 2011. This was the most powerful earthquake to hit Japan in history, and the fourth most powerful in the world since record-keeping began in 1900. The earthquake then triggered a mega tsunami with waves more than 130 feet high in some areas. When the powerful waves retreated, they took countless pieces of debris with them that drifted with the currents. Many of these eventually wound up on the Hawaiian and continental U.S. beaches, from Alaska to California. This is where the concrete chunk, one piece of that debris, comes in. It's a 118-ton dock from Mizawa, Japan, that washed up on Agate Beach in Oregon. It had drifted more than 4,300 miles in 15 months. Nor did it travel alone. In addition to a deck covered with seaweed, it carried over 4,000 pounds of living marine creatures. Scientists have identified members of 289 species never before seen in U.S. coastal waters. So far, researchers are still counting. Think about that. 2 tons of living marine creatures drifted from Japan thanks to a catastrophic meteorological event, the probability of which may be increasing as climate change accelerates. And ironically, these animals owe their survival to another hallmark of human presence, debris composed of indestructible building materials such as plastic, fiberglass, and cement that can survive even the roughest seas. Thanks to this combination, species from storm-ravaged areas that previously would have died in transit now have a greater chance of surviving and establishing themselves in new environments. And if they encounter no predators in those new locations, they'll thrive and destroy the native populations. Just thinking about all the ramifications of this made my brain ache. Fortunately, I reached that point just about the time the butternut squirrel entered my life. Whereas the migration of multiple species via human waste of one sort or another may accelerate the rates of behavioral change among invasive and established animal populations, the butternut squirrel faced a different kind of climate-related problem. Permit me to set the scene. One of the many things I love about my little house is the bay window over the kitchen sink that overlooks the road and valley below. But as I prepare or clean up after meals, or even just go to the kitchen faucet for a drink of water, I automatically look out the window. More often than not, I have other things on my mind when I do this. Consequently, while I'm always looking, I'm not always seeing. This has been a strange fall with periods of hot and dry and hot and humid weather, alternating with cold and dry and cold and wet ones. Instead of a widespread killing frost that hits everything at once, so far only certain plants, and sometimes even just parts of certain plants, show evidence of frost damage. The leaves on some trees remain bright green, while those on the oaks, usually the last to go, have fallen daily for weeks. The result in fall foliage is a mixed bag of green, oranges, browns, yellows, a smattering of red, and bare trees. Consequently, the bareness of the tall, slender tree across the road first caught my attention as I looked out the bay window. After a while, several features of the tree increasingly penetrated whatever matters of great consequence I pondered. The tree's lower half got lost in a tangle of colorful foliage in the meadow and woods behind it. But its crown branched out like a naked silhouette against the brilliant blue sky. Additionally, only the basics registered. What kind of tree was it? Was it dead? I didn't think so. Why hadn't I noticed it before? Then I noticed what looked like clusters of small orbs at the end of the otherwise naked branches that I could see. Could these possibly be nuts? But how could that be? Surely I would know if there was a nut tree across the road from my house. I never said the thoughts I had at my kitchen sink were profound. I'm just reporting what occurred. Soon the nut theory seemed like the most promising one. It gained credence, as if summoned by my thoughts, another feature the bare tree registered. Despite the slenderness of the branches that held those maybe, maybe not nuts, at certain times of the day, a squirrel made multiple trips up and down the tree. I can't say for sure that this was the same squirrel, but the interval between trips suggested he was away from the tree long enough for some reason that another squirrel had plenty of time to climb it between his trips, had such a squirrel existed. But I dismissed such thoughts. I had more important things to think about. Or so I told myself, at first. But then I went down to get my mail, and the pull of the tree proved irresistible. I marveled at its straightness and lovely gray bark. Upon closer inspection, I also noticed lots of empty nutshells on the ground around its base. Someone, or maybe several someones, also had apparently discovered the tree and had dibs on the fallen nuts. Now I was hooked. For a while, work intervened, so I didn't get back to the window until late afternoon. By then, I'd convinced myself that there was only one squirrel, and probably a young male willing to risk an encounter with a potentially much larger nut-eater on the ground. There be bears out there, among other nut-eating critters, this time of year. On that last day, as the sun began to set, I watched a squirrel make multiple attempts to curl up in a ball at the junction of two small branches that seemed incapable of supporting his weight. This further supported my theory that he was inexperienced. I don't know that the branches were too fragile to support his weight for a fact either. But I do know that periodically something caused him to spring out of his curled position and stumble about clumsily before settling down again. However, it's also possible that he was getting hit by blasts from the frigid wind blowing across the meadow. And it was cold high up there in a naked tree without a nest. Eventually, he gave up, zipped down the tree, and I've never seen him again. Two quite different scenarios. A large influx of invasive species thanks to a record-breaking storm, and a butternut crop available to a young squirrel thanks to a very strange fall that had its share of storms too. While I'd like to consider the invasive species evil, I can't. Any more than I can blame the nut-eating critters that may have forced the butternut squirrel to engage in such a high energy intense collection strategy and with failed attempts to curl up and sleep in that tree. Invasives and squirrel had to deal with climatic changes just as we all do. Like us, they all seek to ensure their own survival. But unlike us, and in spite of how often we choose to perceive them as lesser and thus more fragile, their closer connection to the natural world just might give them the advantage in the long run.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries, and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore, by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Katova Arts, www.katova.com.